Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We want to bring marriage equality. We also want to protect religious freedom in this state. How we do that and the words are very, very important. And we've been working with a number of senators through that.
Governor Cuomo, and it's down to the wire in Albany, the final day today of the legislative session, or at least it's supposed to be, with a flurry of bills about to be passed, perhaps including the ones you've been hearing about the most, the strengthening of the New York City rent laws, the property tax cap for outside the city, and same-sex marriage. Unexpected stuff will come up at the last minute, too, as it always does, in the Albany endgame process, affectionately known as the Big Ugly. For example, seemingly out of the blue, the state legislature may now approve Mayor Bloomberg's plan for outer borough taxi hails, which he couldn't get through city council. Let's get the latest and talk about some of the underlying issues, like whether adoption agencies might be allowed to turn away gay couples as part of this deal, with Democratic Assemblyman Hakeem Jeffries of Brooklyn. District includes parts of Clinton Hill, Fort Greene, Bedford-Stuyvesant, and others. Assemblyman Jeffries, welcome back to WNYC.
Brian, good morning.
Here it is, day zero. If you're counting down, is there a deal first on gay marriage?
Well, it still appears that the Republican majority in the Senate, unfortunately, is trying to, one, decide whether they're going to bring the bill to the floor, and two, at what price that there will be in order for the bill to get an up or down vote. I think that if Dean Skelos decides to bring the bill to the floor of the Senate, that there will be more than 32 members of the state Senate who vote for marriage equality, which would be a historic moment in New York State. It appears that he is just trying to work out the internal politics as it relates to his members. The Conservative Party and many members of the right wing, of course, have threatened any Republican senator to the extent that they decide to support marriage equality, and that's a consideration that it appears their conference is working through.
The Conservative Party of New York State, a powerful third party on the right, just as the Working Families Party is a powerful third party on the left, is important here. I think they won't endorse any Republican for re-election who votes for gay marriage, but the question is, how many Republicans are in safe districts who don't really need that Conservative Party endorsement, and maybe if enough of them can cast their votes in that direction, then that will be satisfied. But the Post also reported Saturday that a main sticking point may be allowing religious adoption agencies to turn away gay couples for adoption and foster care even after marriage. Do you know that to be the case?
It appears that that is one of the concerns that has been raised by a few of the Republican senators who are considering voting in support of marriage equality. Senator Greg Ball from the Hudson Valley region has articulated the concern that there needs to be additional protections for religious-affiliated organizations in connection with the bill. It should be pointed out, one, that there are strong protections contained in the legislation right now to ensure that no religion or no religious figure or institution would be compelled to do anything inconsistent with their religious beliefs. And in fact, the Constitution of the United States of America and the First Amendment is very clear on this issue. You have a free exercise clause in the First Amendment that prohibits government from imposing any dictates on a religious organization or religion.
But that language, the way you just stated it, seems to me is overbroad. I mean, it's certainly sometimes a tough line to walk, as we heard in the clip from the governor. How do you protect religious liberty to allow churches and other religious institutions to be true to their values at the same time as enforcing the value of non-discrimination? But if you just say churches won't be stopped from, practicing their religion. I mean, the law would not allow, for example, churches to refuse couples on the basis of being interracial, even though some churches might say that that was, within their value system. Or would it?
Well, the Constitution strikes an appropriate balance because there's the free exercise clause, but then there's also the establishment clause, which essentially says that government cannot impose any religious values on others, presumably in a way that undermines civil rights or civil liberties. And so that essentially is what we're trying to accomplish here in New York State. And the concern that many of us have is that the Senate Republican majority is seeking to go too far in order to allow for the up or down vote on marriage equality.
So what would be too far for you, for example, that you hear might be in the bill?
Well, I think to the extent there's a conversation about the adoption issue, you know, on the one hand, if we are going to permit, as we should, marriage equality for same-sex couples, then it seems to me that it would be somewhat problematic if we're then going to turn around and impose restrictions on the ability for those same-sex married couples to raise children looking for a loving home. I'd be more interested in getting a better understanding of the specifics that are under discussion, which may be the case when we reconvene later on today in Albany. But I have some concern and trepidation about the adoption issue or some of the other things that are being put on the table.
Would it be a deal breaker for you if it were to come to the floor like that with adoption?
Well, I'd want to talk to the advocates as it relates to the marriage equality issue and get, you know, a sense from them as to their view on the appropriateness of some of the things that the Republican majority are demanding. And, of course, I'm also interested in the views of the religious community, and we are trying to strike, you know, an appropriate balance here mm-hmm. to permit the civil institution of marriage to go forward for everyone, regardless of sexual orientation, but also respect the deeply held religious views of many people of goodwill who have objections to the marriage equality issue.
Democratic Assemblyman Hakeem Jeffries of Brooklyn. And listeners, where is that line for you? Let's open the phones on this for a few minutes. Would this be a deal breaker for you on either side of the question if religious institutions, religious adoption agencies were able to deny adoptions to legally married same-sex couples, adoptions or foster care placements? Would this be a deal breaker for you if it is in there, if you're pro same-sex marriage? Would this be a deal breaker for you if it's not in there, if your religion sees same-sex marriage as a sin or however else you would characterize it? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Assemblyman, is it anything other than adoptions? Before we move on to something else, churches already would not be required to perform gay weddings if they don't consider that in their value system. So any other specific opt-outs that you know are in play besides adoption and foster care?
Well, a few of the Republican senators who are on the fence have articulated sort of a broad concern that religious-affiliated not-for-profits not be required to do anything that, in their view, would be perceived as supportive of same-sex marriage, even if it doesn't relate directly to the consummation of that marriage. Now, that's been a very broad, generally articulated concern without specifics, which is why there are some of us who are skeptical that a few of the senators are simply trying to torpedo the legislation and don't really want to arrive at a good faith resolution. And therefore, every time one issue appears to be resolved, another broadly articulated concern is raised so that ultimately the clock is run out and we're not able to accomplish the objective this session.
What if, let's say, you're a religious individual who objects to same-sex marriage? And I should say that there are many religious individuals who are fine with same-sex marriage. It depends on your religion and your individual views. But let's say there's a cake maker, a bakery, that does wedding catering, and they want to refuse to take the business of couples who are going to get married in same-sex weddings. Would that be protected under the Constitution as it is, in your opinion, or would that be covered under these opt-outs as they're being debated?
First of all, I think it'd make him a terrible business person because we're likely to see, as the advocates have pointed out, an explosion in the marijuana industry that's going to be good for the economy. That is not the reason to do this bill, but it certainly is an economic benefit to moving forward with marriage equality. Second,
but where's the line if somebody were to make that decision personally?
Well, it's not clear to me that the legislation would permit that type of religious objection, nor should it. If it is a religious-affiliated organization that, for instance, by your example, is connected to a catering institution, I think there is a reasonable argument to be made mm-hmm. that that religious-affiliated organization can have the discretion to turn down the business. To the extent that any single individual unconnected to a religious-affiliated organization can interpose a religious objection, that seems problematic and a very dangerous right. slippery slope.
Antonia in Emerson. You're on WNYC. Hi, Antonia.
Hi, Brian, and thank you for taking my call. I find this a really interesting topic because religious views change as a function of time. If you were to go back to approximately 1850 in the American South, you would find a large number of Baptist scholars saying that slavery was not only God-directed, but was ordained, that this was the result of the curse of Cain and Abel. And we see this later on in Mormon theology. Initially, the Mormons did not recruit blacks because they felt that they had the mark of sin on them. So, transpolating that same thing to today, if someone is a gay couple and seeking adoption, and the adoption process has government money in it, for example, Catholic Services is very often funded by New York State or New York City to provide social services, how can they then claim, after taking government money, that they now have a unique religious instance here preventing a gay couple from adopting a child?
Right. Interesting question. So what about as it pertains to Catholic Charities or any other organization that's involved in adoptions or foster care, if they are, that accepts public funds?
Well, I think the caller has hit on two critical points. One, that to the extent that any organization takes government funding, we have anti-discrimination laws on the books, both in the city, the state, and in the nation, that prohibit various forms of discrimination. In the state, cannot discriminate on the basis of race, gender, or, for instance, sexual orientation. And as a result of that fact, to the extent that an organization takes government funding in connection with the adoption process, for instance, I do think it will be problematic to provide a religious exemption and sanction discrimination on a widespread fashion. The call also has pointed out that, you know, in the 1800s, in this country, in the Deep South, Christianity was both used by abolitionists as sort of a source for the liberation movement, but it was used by the institution of slavery and the curse of Ham to justify the enslavement of African Americans as a second-class group of individuals. And so religion over time has been manipulated. I do not want to suggest that many of the individuals, for instance, the Archbishop and others who have articulated a concern with respect to marriage equality, are being discriminatory in their views and are artificially manipulating their religious beliefs. They are good faith beliefs. We just happen to disagree on this institution of marriage because in many ways there is a civil aspect to it, and the state should not be discriminatory in allowing for who gets married and who doesn't get married.
Barbara in College Point, you're on WNYC. Hi, Barbara.
Yes, hi, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I wanted to say that I actually was adopted through a Catholic adoption agency when I was a small child. And one of the last things that my mother requested, of course, by bringing me to this Catholic agency was in the hopes that I could be raised Catholic. And so having adoptive parents that were also Catholic and were very interested in raising their children in the same faith, they went to this Catholic agency, and I was adopted. And I have to say that I've had some personal life, but the one thing that I'm very, very grateful for is the fact that I was raised Catholic and remain Catholic, and I think that it's very important that there would be a stipulation in this new law. And I would be very upset if there wasn't some kind of protection. I don't believe in having children be raised by same-sex couples if they are going to be adopted through a Catholic adoption agency.
And
I think that should be a right.
That's really interesting, Barbara, and I definitely hear you. To play this out to its logical potential conclusion, let's say that there was a gay couple, because there certainly are gay Catholics, who were to come to the adoption agency and say, you know, we want to adopt a child and we want to raise that child Catholic, just as we practice our Catholicism, even though the church doesn't recognize our gay union.
Well, the problem with that is that it is against the religion for same-sex to act on same-sex inclination. So, just the same way, like, for example, if somebody from the clergy became aware that you were purposefully and defiantly going against some tenet of the religion, they would be obligated to not move forward on any request. For example, if you were asking to get married for some reason, they knew you were trying to do something inappropriate in the eyes of the religion, they really are not allowed to move forward. And, I mean, even with same-sex couples, not, you know, if they knew there was some infidelity issue or egregious thing that goes against the tenets of the religion, they will not marry you any other rite of the religion.
Thank you very much. I got to move on because of time, but thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate it. And Lisa from Montclair points out on a related note on our comments page, religious institutions are already free to refuse to marry couples. My husband and I had to search for a rabbi willing to marry us because I am a Jew and he is not. I think this issue is a red herring put forth by the opponents of same-sex marriage. So including the comment, Assemblyman, three different views, really all coming from three different places. And you hear Barbara's concern from College Point. You heard the previous caller from Emerson. And so I guess that's what you're trying to weave together up there to get this deal done, right?
Yeah, and I think the appropriate line may actually relate to the use of government money to the extent that an organization like Catholic Charities, for instance, engages in adoption but is not facilitated through any government grant, then I think there's a stronger argument to be made that religious objections should be allowed with respect to the denial of adoption to same-sex couples. I'm not convinced as to that position. I do think that in the absence of government money, there's a stronger argument there. But certainly these are the issues that we're going to have to work out over the next day or so.
Democratic Assemblyman Hakeem Jeffries of Brooklyn, Clinton Hill, Fort Greene, Bedford-Stuyvesant, and around there as we follow the developments on what's supposed to be the last day of the legislative session and so much going on. Let me touch a couple of other things with you before we run out of time. The rent law, property tax cap deal. Rent is one of your big issues, housing in general. One report today is that the strengthening of the rent laws would still allow landlords to decontrol apartments when the current tenant moves out if they can renovate that apartment up to a $2,500 a month rent level. The current law is $2,000 a month. Once you reach that $2,500 with enough renovation, then the landlord can raise it to whatever the market will bear. Now, that's not much of an improvement from the pro-rent control perspective, $2,000 to $2,500. Is that the deal you're working on?
Well, that's not a significant improvement, and that deal at the $2,500 level would be unacceptable to me and I think many of my colleagues in the Assembly. If you go back to the original vacancy decontrol law and when the number was set at 2000, that was done in 1993. Unfortunately, it was not indexed for inflation or tied to rent guidelines board increases. If, in fact, that $2,000 number had either been indexed to inflation in 93 or tied to yearly increases that landlords receive from the Rent Guidelines Board, that number right now would be somewhere between $3,500 and $4,200.
Right, considering what's happened to the average rent. And amazing that that figure hasn't been indexed for inflation, and we're still dealing with an expiration figure for a stabilized department that was set in the 1990s.
Absolutely. There's no legitimate argument that can be made that $2,000 is a luxury number in 2011 as it was in 1993. And so the premise of the law is flawed, and any insignificant increase, such as $2,500, I think would be unacceptable to a majority of my colleagues. It certainly would be unacceptable to me.
Right.
And I know that Speaker Silver and Governor Cuomo are pushing for a much higher number. The problem, of course, is that we're faced with a Senate Republican majority that often acts like a wholly owned subsidiary of the landlord lobby.
The News and Post both report today that Governor Cuomo threatened the landlords and the Senate Republicans that if they don't strengthen the law up to a reasonable amount, he will declare a housing emergency, which allows the New York City Council to establish rent rules rather than the legislature. And the council is much more pro-tenant than the legislature is. Think he'd go through with it?
Well, I think the governor is completely justified in raising that possibility. You know, the Senate Republican majority essentially and the real estate industry, largely RSA, is operating from the 2003 playbook, the last time we faced the expiration of rent stabilization, rent regulation laws, where they try and run the clock down to the very last minute, and then they pass something, as they did in 2003, that extends the law with weakening amendments, and then they get out of town, and they're the assembly to allow the laws to expire. And essentially, we are put in a take-it-or-leave-it position. But in 2003, we had a governor, George Pataki, who was hostile to the tenants. In 2011, we have a governor who's working with us in the assembly majority. And he said two things that are important. One, that if there is a three-way deal that is not, or that if we fail to reach a three-way deal that is unsatisfactory, that we are going to remain in Albany through an extraordinary session that he has the power to call until we have a deal worked out
right.
that adequately strengthens rent regulation.
Which is why the session may actually not end today or technically end, and then a new special session would start first thing tomorrow. But this also raises a fundamental question. Why does the state have the power anyway over city rent policy? Why do senators from Onondaga County have a say anyway if it doesn't affect their constituents? Same, in fact, with this new taxi hail law that I see is coming down the pike. Mayor Bloomberg's plan to allow outer borough hails of livery cabs, which he couldn't get through city council, now on the verge of being approved by you guys in the legislature. Why do people from Buffalo get to do that and end run around the city council?
Well, that's a great question, and the state does have extraordinary power, often to the dismay of New York City mayors from Koch and Dinkins and Giuliani on to Mayor Bloomberg. In this particular instance, the Erstad law was passed in the 70s.
That's the housing law.
Which is the housing law, and it prohibits New York City from enacting tenant protection laws that are stronger than laws that we have in New York State. Many of us have been arguing for years for the repeal of the Erstad law so we can return home rule to New York City. What was great about Governor Cuomo's declaration that he would be willing to call a state of emergency, which would then allow him to suspend the Erstad law and return home rule over tenant protections to New York City, is that it creates a different dynamic in Albany from what we've traditionally had. Mm-hmm. And there is no reason for senators from Western New York or the North Country or Central New York who know nothing about rent regulation or the nature of the housing market and the difficulties that tenants face in New York City to be deciding the fate of 2.5 million New Yorkers who live in rent-regulated housing.
And we're just about out of time, but how about the content of the outer borough taxi hails? We'll be taking a closer look at that policy in a separate segment later in the show today, but representing places in Brooklyn, do you have a position on that?
Yes, we want to make sure that outer borough livery cabs and that industry is protected. The yellow cabs and the medallions provide a tremendous service, but largely to wealthier neighborhoods or business-oriented neighborhoods in New York City. And for decades, out-of-borough New Yorkers, such as those that live in the communities I represent in Central Brooklyn, could not get taxi cab service absent the liveries. Now, as these neighborhoods are changing and gentrifying and more affluent individuals are moving into out-of-borough neighborhoods, we're starting to see a greater degree of interest from the yellow cabs in venturing out of certain parts of Manhattan. But that should not occur to the detriment of the livery industry, which has been providing service when no one wanted to come into our neighborhood.
So you're for this plan?
I'm supportive of the plan in general and look forward to working with both, you know, Carl Hasty, who's the chair of the city's committee and the author of the bill, as well as Mayor Bloomberg, his administration, and Chairman Yasky.
Right. And certainly your district includes an area with a lot of change and very mixed populations at this point, and probably blocks where yellow cabs will go and blocks where yellow cabs won't go, you know, even though it's illegal for them not to go anywhere, but to cruise, to look for hails, Clinton Hill, Fort Greene, Bedford-Stuyvesant, and we will talk about this in more depth later in the show. So there's a review of some of the issues that are still on the table on this last day of the legislative session in Albany. Democratic Assemblyman Hakeem Jeffries of Brooklyn, thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Oh, thank you, Brian, as always.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Wall Street pushes Dodd-Frank repeal, at least part of it. And then Irshad Manji on whether the Arab Spring signals a more liberal Islam. Stay with us.